They changed the clock in America, so be aware if you call, there's a 7-hour difference now. Okay, let's get started. Today is Sunday, November 4th, 2012, and we sit in dry Jerusalem, and we continue our work. Be'ezrat Hashem. First of all, I just want to mention, in relation to things I've said in class, the office got an email from, this is a Talmud, a Chabadnik in London, who listens to the Shayurim. And if you recall, I quoted the Rav, where the Rav said, if you ever have a machlokes with a chassid, you can knock him over the head on two levels. One is that he doesn't eat in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, which is against an open Gemara, Masechet Sukkah, Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. And two, that he daven shelo bizman. So he writes, it should be noted that Chabad Chassidim are medakdek not to even take a sip of water out of the sukkah, even on Shmini Atzeret. So I only want to tell him that's very nice, but what do you do about Chabad davening Shabbos morning 9:30? No Chabad minyan begins before 9:30. I believe 100% of the time 9:30 is after Zman Kriyat Shema. Also, I want to mention that when I spoke about, I think it may have been in the Monday class, but the late Friday night services in Australia, I mean, it's not late, but how they elongate the service to accommodate the Jews who are not medaktek in Shmirat Shabbat and come in late after they get home from work during the winter. And I spoke about South Africa and Australia, so my podiatrist, who's a South African, tells me in his time, the shuls in South Africa, although Friday night is the main service, but they didn't have to accommodate everyone with Shema Shabbos already. And what I said is true about Australia, because I myself was part of such a service in Sydney. But it's not so in South Africa, and it could be I was totally wrong, maybe it never was so, but I have a feeling that I was correct. But that goes back to the 1920s, the 1930s, the 1940s. Since World War II, South Africa has had the greatest percentage of Balei Tshuva. The community, I don't know what the figures are, but I would not be surprised to learn that under 50% of the South African Jewish community is Shomer Shabbos today. And out of that 50%, 90% are Balei Tshuva. So I don't want to cast aspersions on the South African community, and I accept that the Chaluk Lux emendation, and I partially correct myself. Okay, let's roll. The question of minhag, how powerful is minhag? And you'll see later today how nothing really changes. But what makes minhag so attractive to the masses is the Yerushalmi that we've been discussing for months already. Minhag mevatel halacha. Wow. And minhag mevatel halacha is not just in monetary issues, but in prohibitions, isa v'heter as well. And the Gemara talks about it in relation to, you want to talk monetary issues, when you hire someone to work for you, you can tell him you have to start work at 6 in the morning and end at 6 at night, and he can tell you go fly a kite because the minig is 9 to 5. When it comes to the chalitza shoe that the woman has to take off, right? V'chaltzat na'lo, you talk about the chalitza shoe. There too, the Gemara is so sharp that if Eliyahu Nabi would come and tell us that a sandal is not good, you would tell Eliyahu Nabi to get lost. This is Minig Yisrael, this is what we take off. Don't correct us. The classic example, of course, is the Gemara, it's in the Bavli a number of times, and I quoted it to you, that when it comes to marrying a woman, the Torah says clearly and succinctly, Sheiratak sutavi onata lotigara, that a man owes his wife, and let's learn Pshat like Rashi now, he owes his wife Sheira food kisuta, clothes, onata is sexual relations. So the Gemara says, when it comes to the monetary aspects, the husband and wife can agree, forget it. Our minhag is different than what the Torah is saying. My husband doesn't have to clothe me, doesn't have to feed me, doesn't have to support me. Feminism, woman's lib, call it what you wish. Of course, the Bavli says when it comes to onah, and I apologize for using the word from the New York Times, but God have mercy on us, it appears already in our publications. If a man and woman say we're going to have an open marriage, quote, end quote, that already you can't change. So, of course, if this is the case, so what does the Yerushalmi mean by minhag naksar halacha when it comes even to Issa v'heta? So we gave many sources to show that when the halacha is not clear, to use the word of the Rishonim, it's actually Yerushalmi as well, rofefet. When the halacha, we're not certain what the halacha means. When it's rofefet, then what the people do is the deciding answer. If they do something, we follow the minhag. Even though it's Issa v'heta, we follow the minhag, because the Gemara is not clear. The halacha remains in dispute. And I showed you last week, it's a famous Gemara, it's the Gemara in Pesachim, but I showed you the Tosefta on the Gemara. And the Tosefta uses the word that the Jewish people have Ruach HaKodesh. And somehow the intrinsic common sense of the Jewish people, if we're not certain what to do, follow your instincts. And those are very powerful words. The Gemara in Pesachim says it a little differently. I quoted the Gemara, Daf Samach Vav, Amid Aleph, Samach Vav, Amid Bet, it's an entire sugya. Im lo neviim heim, b'nei neviim heim. And this speaks for itself. Wow. So you see, the population, you can depend upon them. They know what they're doing. I showed you where Rabbeinu Tam and Sefer Yasha last week. A very interesting question. Why do women have to light Shabbos candles? This is lighting of Shabbos candles is a kiyum of kibud v'yonek. You've all learned that, you've all studied it. But then the question is, so why do we go out of our way to light? The electricity is on. For the sake of argument, you're living it's winter in Jerusalem. So there's some days that are very cloudy, very dark. So you turn the electricity on, thank God we have electricity here, we haven't been flooded. We only have a problem with electricity during the summer when they plead with you not to turn on your air conditioning, the washing machine, the dryer, from 12 noon till I think 5 in the afternoon, because the businesses, afterwards do what you want. During the winter, there's certainly no problem. So the electricity is on. What do you have to light Shabbos candles? The whole purpose of lighting Shabbos candles is that there should be light in the house. Keep the beyond. You shouldn't sit in the darkness on Shabbos. I remember the Rav saying that he judges people. This is ancient history, Daniel. I remember the Rav saying, and it must have to be the mid-50s, that he judges whether people are cheap or not by the amount of lights they leave on for Shabbos. You heard the Rav say that?
To what time the Shabbos clock goes off.
To what time the Shabbos clock goes off. I heard him say it a little differently, that the amount of lights they leave on. And there's something to that. There's something to that. So why does she have to light candles? And the electricity is on. And here Rabbeinu Tam says that he asked women, and they told him this is their minhag, that even if the candles are on before, they blow them out, and they make a bracha and relight them. And Rabbeinu Tam compares it to a sukkah, that if you have a sukkah that stays up from year to year, and by the way, in Yerushalayim I've seen sukkahs with the schach the entire year. If you go to Boston, I don't know, or maybe they're lazy, or maybe it's too big a job to take off all the schach, but if you go to Boston and Hanov, I see all year, it's a sukkah. So what do you have to do? You have to take part of the schach, shake it up, take it off, and put it back again, l'shem the sukkah chag that's coming. You have to create a sukkah in honor of the chag. So the same thing. The women blow out the candles and relight them and make a bracha. And Rabbeinu Tam says, depend upon the women. Im lo neviyotein, b'nei neviyot, but b'not neviyotein. And this is the approach. When it's something we're not certain, when we can go either way, yesh ruach hakodesh lam Yisrael. Yesh nacham. Well, you're asking an interesting question. Logically speaking, you should be correct. Yeah. Logically speaking, you're correct. And Rav Heschel Schachter actually, I once was sitting, again, with all that's going on in the commentator, I don't want to get involved in Machlekes with Rav Heschel, but I remember I was sitting at an OU convention with him. You know, we go back to childhood, so all barriers are down. So he and his wife was sort of complaining that if my husband had my way, there would be no Shabbos candles. All you would do was turn on the electricity, and that's it. And by the way, logically, he's correct, because the whole purpose is to have kibbutz v'oned. Who uses kerosene candles today? Who sits by the Shabbos candles and gets light from it? Then you have a whole halakha, shemiyate, you know, the Gemara in Bamei Madlik, and you would have to have another person sitting there, remind me not to touch the candles. But according to Rav Heschel, according to what Nachum said, you can come to a situation where everyone in a hotel, you don't light candles because it's a sakana in your room, and all you do is leave on the electricity. All right, I don't think women are going to buy it. Why can't you make a bracha? Keep it beyond. One second. Hold off. I just want to tell you one thing. You know, you have to have a little emotion. You can't be just a kauta litvak. So Kanai and Hara, my wife, when the children were young, and God blessed me only with girls, which is a big blessing. I know, Danny, you're upset that I'm praising the feminine mystique and not praising the male species. But I have my reasons. It's a big blessing to be blessed with daughters. So when the girls were little, remember we were in a hotel for a bar mitzvah. I even remember whose bar mitzvah. And he was later a YU musmach. But you don't want to meet him professionally because he's an undertaker today. So let it stand at that. So we had his bar mitzvah, the Washington Hotel. Where was that? In Long Beach, Bell Harbor. I mean, it's long since gone. So Malka's lighting candles, and I had two daughters at the time, and each one is lighting little candles. And a man, a survivor, a Yiddish mensch, saw it, and he burst into tears. So you have to understand, it's very important to let the women continue, and we can't take away. It's a beautiful mitzvah, it's a beautiful kiyum, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the wisdom of the Rebbe. Remember I told you about it, I don't want to repeat myself. But the Rebbe was so, everyone criticized him, chadash hasum and Torah, innovating. We're fighting a battle for survival today, and they're worried about innovating. Okay, Baruch Hashem. Yeah, what did you want to say?
You have a sukkah, you have the bench layer. So sometimes you're afraid the wind.
Right, right.
So actually what you're saying, you can put the lights on and don't bench layer.
So you should bench licht in the house. If you're worried that the sukkah, that the candles will be blown out, leave a light on in the sukkah, l'shem kibbutz v'oneg, and bench it. But you can't. Rav Heschel said in theory he would abolish all candle lighting. If you take it to its end result, you abolish all candle lighting. We're all on electricity today. Baruch Hashem. All right, I like what you said, that the rub with the time clock said it depends how long it leaves the time clock on. So that tells me right away that the rub differed with Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe wasn't happy with time clocks. It was a chumrah that no one follows. I say a vote that every great posek has to be machmir occasionally. But where is he machmir? He's machmir in something no one will listen to anyway. It's like Rav Ovadia Yosef, us is putting on a shetel. No, how many Sfadik women put on a shetel? Everyone looks the other way. Baruch Hashem, you last with Sfadik Paisek. Thank God they're wearing a shetel. And then they're not going without any head covering. But he's a big machmir. So you can't say Rav Avadja is always make you. You follow me?
I'm not a chassid. But when I taught Kerosene candles, carry people in the conversion class. Why do you light Shabbos candles? May Hashem Nishmas Adam. All week long we work with our bodies. One day a week we have a Shabbat day. On Shabbos we remember that we are created by Hashem. We have light two candles because Friday is the birthday of Adam Machal.
I have to tell you, you are an excellent darshan, an excellent preacher. It moves me. But to tell you that the sources for it, we have to say Rabbi Yitzchak Rubin, year 2002 in the RCA conversion class.
Well, when you think about it,
very nice.
As many neshamas as there are.
Very nice.
I
spoke about that. You're absolutely right. I accept what you're saying. And Ellie, we will not argue. Moshe, let's continue. Then I showed you something else last week, that Mida cannot be Mavatal Halacha when it's an Issa, but I showed you the Ra'abad, the Rivet Shita, that the Rivet has an unbelievable Shita, that where it's a Dinda Rabbanon, Mida cannot out the Halacha. And I gave, and I showed you the Rivet, it has to deal with, you remember, with Caribs, with St. John's bread, Karuvim, whatever name you know it by. And the Minig Yisrael was to take off Trumat Maisrat the next year, even though it had blossomed before Tu Bishvat. And this is against the Minhag, this is against the Halakha, I should say. And nevertheless, he justifies it because taking Trumat Maisrat off Buxer is only a Din Derabbanan, and even though it's in the Iser, it's not Mammon. But nevertheless, many Israel can knock out an Issa Derabbanan. And then I threw out a thought, which you have to think about, and it's a basic thought, and it's a real terrible problem, and I've been asked the question 1,000 times over. Here, we talk about a woman covering her hair. Here, we talk about Upara et Roshah. It's written in the Torah. We're not talking something esoteric. What is it? Pashat Masah. It's written in the Torah. The woman, that you disgrace the woman, a sultan, you uncover her hair. And a married woman has to cover her hair. And here, everyone knows that in Lithuania and parts of Poland, there was a total breakdown in this halacha. I'm talking about not the wives of street cleaners. I'm talking about the wives of Gedolei Yisrael. And you all know with America, I have to say, I never mentioned all the names I know. One of my colleagues, Taka, mentioned the names at a public shir. All right, the Rav, everyone knows the Rav's wife didn't cover her head. That was it is common knowledge. But there are the Gedolim, their wives didn't cover their hair when they came to America. Absolutely not. So you wonder, and Dr. Belton was asked this very question, I remember at a public talk he gave also, it has to be the 50s, and of Shmuel Belkin, who was a split personality. There was always a dialectical tension. There was Reb Shmuel, the Litvish Yeshiva Bacher, which he never stopped being. And a minute later, he was president of Yeshiva University. He was Reb Shmuel Dr. Belkin. You follow me, Ellie? You had to know him to appreciate what I'm saying. And I can tell you endless stories. I mean, when I was working on a paper, I was part of a fellowship on Dina de Malchut de Dina, and here's the Rub sitting at the head with Dr. Belkin, and I'm presenting my paper. All right, you have to have guts to present the paper in front of the Rav, and suddenly Rav Shmuel Belkin leans back and he starts quoting Rishonim and Achronim, and we're sitting there, the Rav too, we're sitting there astounded, the knowledge the man is digging out of his past. And he could, and this was not just on Din of the Malchuta. Wherever you turned, wherever you went, Rav Shmuel could sit back and start throwing a Tosfot at you, word by word, line by line. So, They asked him, and he said, there was respect, each one respected the other. I once bothered Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein on this topic, and he asked the Rav, and he told me what the Rav told him. But then the question is, fine, why didn't the rabbis rebuke the women, reprimand the women? I mean, after all, these were Gedolei Yisrael. All right, you can give a simple answer that you can be a Gedolei Yisrael when you come home, your wife tells you to throw out the garbage. You understand? I mean, this is reality. This is life. That's the famous story in Tells, which is an absolute true story, where with the Tells of Rosh Yeshiva, Rebellion Meir Bloch, and you had to know him to appreciate this story, that when Tells began, and they have a kollel now, and you're talking in the 50s already, and the one student comes to the Rosh Yeshiva, he's a newlywed, he's complaining to the Rosh Yeshiva that his wife denigrates him, she tells him he has to throw out the garbage. Understand the guy there, Ben Taylor, I don't know, Moshe, this is a serious problem. If you learned in Slabatka, you have a problem. I'm lucky I learned in Slabatka, and I learned in Novatic. So I took the best out of Slabatka and the best out of Novatic. But if you learned in Slabatka, we have a problem. Your wife told you to throw out the garbage. So he complained to Rebbe Meir. So Rebbe Meir listens, and the next morning there's a knock at his door at 7:30, opens the door, there's the Rosh Yeshiva. Can I throw out the garbage? If you feel you're too important to throw out the garbage, let the Rosh Yeshiva throw out the garbage and help your wife. And that Talmud, I trust, got the message loud and clear. So, all right, not always can you tell your wife what to do. But nevertheless, it's a very powerful, potent question. And this Ravid helps the thesis. You have no idea. If you're going to do a paper on it and you're going to quote the Sefer Mitzvot that came out in New Haven in the 1920s, Rav Horowitz, and he has that long footnote, and the Rav said exactly what he said, that when the Gemara says the Oraita, the Gemara in Ketuvot, after Sugya, Ayin Aleph, Ayin Bet, the Gemara doesn't mean it's a din the Oraita. It means that was the minhag, the nohag at the time of the Oraita. So it means it's a din the Rabbanan, and a married woman has to cover her hair. This is a din the Rabbanan, and it's part of tzniut, part of the way a woman has to dress. But if it's a din the Rabbanan, and the minhag is not to do it, you don't rebuke them. The Ravid, you have to be quiet, silent. Again, I put in the word of caution I said last week, that this has nothing to do with halacha lemaisa. In the year 2013, when the world has gone sexually crazy, and the President of the United States and the Mayor of New York are exponents and propagandists for same-sex marriages, and Shmuley Boteach is running to be a congressman in New Jersey, and he's interviewed on the radio, on the TV, this is modern history, just the last week or two, and there's a woman who left Satmar, left Gay, whatever, a Haredit woman, a former Haredit in rebellion. And evidently she's a movie actress, she leaves her husband, she's a model, Baruch Hashem, I didn't see the pictures, but I already read the pornography. And the Yesh Shmuley Boteach about it, she's on this program too, and he says it's perfectly all right. He wouldn't mind if his own daughters were models like this. My dear students, in the year 2013, every woman is obligated, it is sacred, we are different, we are proud, we have standards, we are not animals, and our women have to cover their hair. It's nothing to, but I'm talking historically, I want to be Malamed Zchut on the wives of Gedolei Yisrael. Okay, so that's the Ra'abad, that's the Ravid, fine. And then we ended off with Rabbeinu Tam. And I gave you the source, the Shultei Giborim, and I have to tell you, this is a very powerful question. You have no idea, because when a get is involved, and I know this from Gittin that I've seen, and I know it from my daughter, the biggest problem my daughter tells me when a get is given is the Chakirat Hashemot. And particularly in the state of Israel at this moment in time, because all of us have many different names. Just think for a minute. What is your name? Herbie? Herbert?
Chaim.
You say Chaim. What does your wife call you?
Chaim.
Baruch Hashem. How come I call you Herbie?
I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know. Because you call me Ami.
No, because you know me 50 years.
That's what I'm saying.
I was born Chaim.
You were born Chaim. You were lucky you're alive where you were born. Don't play games. We're dealing here with a survivor. We know each other. Wow, it's absolutely right how long we know each other. Maybe more than 50 already. But anyway, We all have so many different names. Now imagine a Russian comes in. And again, I say to you, spell for me the name Johnny in Hebrew. It's the biggest problem with writing a get.
So,
No. You have the Dalet Zion brand. You have to look into a Sefer Rav Henkin, Rav Back. It's a tremendous problem. There was a Chabadnik who wrote a whole Sefer Kavunaki. He was a big posek at the time of the Tzemach Tzedek. He was a Mumchen Gittin. He wrote a Sefer that in my time all the Mesadre Gittin held that Sefer when they did a get. But here someone comes along and tells Rabbeinu Tam, why do you need all the names? Just write down Chaim and all the nicknames that he has. And he says, this is the minhag in my place. And Rabbeinu Tam washes his face in mud. Chas v'chalila, what you're doing, this is not minhag Yisrael. You can't have a minhag that destroys halacha. Okay, watch. Come back to the rush. Mi lana yotei gadol ben Rabbeinu Asher, his shelet and shuvit. Once again, I'm quoting an edited edition, the edition of Machon Yerushalayim that came out in 1994. I'm quoting from page Reish Mem, and once again he hits home and tells us black and white. When it comes to Issa, you cannot change anything. When it comes to Mammon, everything can be changed. And it all comes back to that basic concept, Hefka Beitin Hefka, that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave the Batei Dinim throughout the generations the ability to run an economy, the ability to civilize the people on economic issues, and whatever they say counts. They can take away money, they can give money, and this Hefka Beitin Hefka, you go into Mishpatei Kohen, you go into the writings of Rav Kook in Choshen Mishpat, and he's not the only one. I can give you a long list of people that say this. Nowadays, it's the government elected by the people. The Knesset Yisrael has the power of Hefka Beitin Hefka. If you don't pay taxes, you are a thief. Why do you owe the government taxes? Because this is the Knesset, their rules, their regulations. It has to be equitable. This is the Rambam, you'll see. I gave lectures on this, many lectures, years and years ago. It has to be equitable. You can't say you just tax Rakefet and you don't tax Reuben. But if Rakefin and Reuben and all of us and Maltz and everyone sitting here and Slebiak and we're all in the same tax bracket until 10,000 shekel a face, it's 25%. 15,000 shekel a month, it's 27%. If it's equitable, this is absolutely binding, and this is where halacha surrenders to the minhag hamakom. And this is Mamonet, and this is the rush. I want to just say in parentheses that the truth of the matter is that all of us should go, not tomorrow because I'm teaching, but on Tuesday to the tax office. And Ellie, you have to go over to the tax office and say, gentlemen, I'm giving you a gift of 10% more than the taxes I owe you. Do you know why at this moment in time you're obligated to do this? Because the election campaign is giving us such entertainment. If you went to a Broadway show, you would pay thousands of dollars to see grown men make fools out of themselves. It is fabulous. What is going on? The problem is you're in a bubble. You're living here in a, you know, you don't know what's going on in YU. You don't know about the commentator, and you don't know what's going on in Israel. But if you live in Israel, wow, are you getting your money's worth for your taxes? By the way, if you've studied Washington to Washington, I hate to tell you, Moshe, family tradition has it that my grandfather, my mother's father, who had learned in Volushin in his youth, and he went to shul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, perhaps, I don't know, maybe Pesach, I don't know. My grandfather, who was a contractor painter, that he gave the American government, let's say he filed his tax form and he owed, you know, we're talking 1910 money, he owed $200, he gave them a gift of $20 as appreciation that he can live in the United States and be an American citizen. So if my grandfather did that, I got to go Tuesday and say, gentlemen, take it all. The entertainment, just leave me bread and water. Entertainment is great. Yes, yes, Menachem.
Why do they have to go out of the way to make like a prosbul or a heteriska if they can just move it doesn't apply?
You're talking about a prosbul or a, because there you're dealing with Isa. You're dealing with ribbit. You're dealing with shviyat. You're confusing mamonet with Isa. You follow me? You broke down the barrier. But let me tell you something. You talk about, let's say, be chametz. Chametz. Everyone says selling chametz. What kind of concept is this, selling chametz? You own a liquor store. All right? In America, people own liquor stores. I used to have real problems. If you remember, Aaron Cohn had a liquor store in I think it was in Newark or Irvington. So he'd sell his chametz and the liquor store would be open on Pesach, so Lopez should. Thank God he has children living here, Shomrei Torah Mitzvah, who was a different generation. I have people from my congregation didn't know a word of Shabbos. Their kids live here 100%, Tanayin Hara, grandchildren, and it's unbelievable, the generation we are privileged to be in. But you're a liquor salesman. You have 2,000 bottles of, my grandchildren know the difference, a blue label, a green label, you can tell me. What is this? Yeah, but the point is this. When you're mafkir, libato, v'leve, kafir, diara, at that moment, technically you don't have to sell your chametz. It's not shas anymore. You turned it into afir, diara. So it's a legal fiction. But it's not such a great legal fiction. Hefka, you made it hefka, you follow me? So if you can make it hefka, lachat beitin has this power. And these are all the rules. For instance, whoever heard of a rule that if I open a falafel store, you can't open one next to me? You follow me? Hasakat gvul. But that's for economy. The same thing with monopoly. All the laws in Israel, they just nixed the sale of potash, of one of the Israeli chemical companies, to a Montreal company for X hundreds of millions of dollars. They nixed it because it would create a monopoly and there would be no competition. You understand? These are all, it logically speaking, why does the government interfere with my money? The same thing with Mariv. I told you, it's my cousin who bought it. My granddaughter-in-law's first cousin. It's not a small matter. The government investigated. Is he allowed to buy Mariv? He owns Makar Rishon, competition. This is what Dini Mamonis is about. But the chiddush here is that it's the government. Now, it has to be equitable. What do I mean by equitable? Today, you don't realize what a blessing it is. You can trade dollars all over Israel. It's legal. When I came in Aliyah, you weren't allowed to own dollars. If you own dollars, I can tell you, Rebbe Yelopin, I was very friendly with his son-in-law, talking to Gadol Shebi Gadolin, Rebbe Yelopin. Could you imagine? He gets an envelope and there's a check in it. That envelope was opened and a note was put in. The government has noticed, or whatever the Mishra, whatever government faculty, facility, has noticed this check. We will check that you cash it in a bank. You understand? And this is, today, it's a pleasure. Yeah, Rabin had to resign over, what was it, $25,000 in an American bank account. I mean, it was terrible. Then the Likud did nothing good except one thing. It gave us a good economy. Outside of that, I don't want to go into it now, but they don't know how to, if Netanyahu can appoint the Attorney General of the State of Israel, a leftist, then Netanyahu is either a half-wit or an idiot. Take your choice. But they didn't know how to govern. But this is Dina de Malchuta. You understand? Now, I'll tell you something interesting. In this very building, a guy used to come in and trade money illegally. A guy from Bayit Vagan, and he traded money. It was all illegal, and the Shaila came up. As I said right away, you're absolutely allowed to do it. Why are you allowed? Even Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, who's more conservative with a small c than Aaron Rakefet, Rabban also couldn't deny it. I see that. You know, Rabban, dialectical tension. He couldn't also. Why? Because the government was trading money on the black market. Whenever they had to stop a devaluation or increase the value, they went to the Pinchas Sapir, the government's going to the black market. What's going on here? This is equitable. These guys, the government doesn't know that there are 101 guys functioning in Geula and Meir Sharim and trading money and any store, and you went into Machne Yehuda. But today, Baruch Hashem, you can trade anywhere. I can tell you even better. My bank told me, my man in my bank, my contact there, a nice fellow from France, a Ben Torah, he says, no, don't trade the money in the bank. We take off too many fees. Go to your private man. You understand? The bank tells you that. It's beyond words. It's Kafka. But it's Dinah D'Malchuta. That's the rush. The rush, very, very powerful. Okay, now I want to show you. And again, I'm going further. Show you something. Mamish takes us into modern life. The Rashbash again. Reb Shlomo ben Rebbe Shimon Duran. Now the Rashbas, again, I cannot tell you how important his sefer is. He and his father, Tashbetz, these are the end of the Rishonic period, great Svadik Poskim, because they were driven out of Spain, they were driven out of Portugal. They wind up in Algiers, they wind up in North Africa. And you have the confluence of endless emigres from every possible Spanish tradition, and they're coming into North Africa. So many questions are being asked. What do we do? How do we act? What is the proper minhag? And he gets them, quoting from Tshuva, a Tuf Yud Tet, Reishin Tuf, that would be 419, right? Reishin Tuf, 419. He's quoting, it's a very brief tshuva. His tshuvot in general are brief and to the point. He had tremendous authority. He was a rishon. And he too gets that question, what does it mean, minhag mevatel halacha? And he says, minhag mevatel halacha, when an iser is not involved. Like everyone else, like all the other rishonim. But look what he says here. If a Nisr is involved, and we would say that a minhag can knock out a Nisr, all prohibitions would disappear. Echad le'echad. V'nimtzeit ha-Torah chas v'chalila b'teila. Gentlemen, what are we talking about? This is, it's unbelievable, the insight here. Ellie, you grew up in the five towns. Did you ever go into a conservative temple?
Have I ever stepped foot in a conservative temple?
Conservative temple. Did you ever know a conservative rabbi? Did you ever study the JTS curriculum? Did you ever hear Rakepit's lectures on the development of Reform and Conservative Judaism in the United States? Ellie, look what the Rashbash just said. Have you ever studied Solomon Schechter? Who is Solomon Schechter? Reb Shneur Zalman Schechter. What does the name Shneur Zalman tell you?
Chabad.
What does the name Schechter tell you? His father was a sheikh. You can imagine his education. Not discovered, yeah, but we'll leave it. Yitz will fill you in. He took advantage of the fact that we are Batlanim, and the people who knew about the Geniza had to come back to Kugel in Yerushalayim, and he got heavy money from two spinsters, took along an assistant named Taylor, and they stayed in the Geniza. I think it was 136 donkeys with two packs on either side of the donkey went to the boat with Kitvei Yad. We are still working on those Kitvei Yad in Tul today. It hasn't all been sorted out. So Solomon Schechter becomes very well known because of the Geniza. Herbie is right. And he becomes reader in rabbinics Cambridge. Fine. By 1902, Jewish Theological Seminary was falling apart. Why was it falling apart? Because there was no market for it. The people in America were either Reform or assimilated. The Germans who had come before the Civil War, after the Civil War, why did they need a JTS? The Eastern European masses looked askance at the JTS students. Like I quote, you read Revel, study Revel, that a student at JTS learns, takes him a whole year, he learns Masechet Megillah. Where I come from, we learn Masechet Megillah in 1 week. You understand? So there, and at Etnishkan Yiddish, he's going to give a sermon in English. Who has to hear the Treif language? So there was no market for them. But a Jew by the name of Jacob Schiff, who had grown up in the lap of Reb Shimshon Ful Hirsch, and was president in America of Temple Emmanuel, the biggest Reform congregation in the world until today. And this very Jew was a multi-millionaire. So he said, no, we need a type of seminary that will give us contemporary Orthodox rabbis. And he put up a lot of money, and they brought Solomon Schechter, who is very famous, to America. And Solomon Schechter slowly but surely comes up with a new theology. You know what that theology is called? When I was a kid, and I used to hear my Rebbeim maledict this theology and use the word, I used to shake like a leaf. Catholic Israel. I thought it meant that all Jews are Catholics. No, Catholic is a Latin word that means universal. And Solomon Schechter came up with a whole ideology that the ultimate arbiter of Jewish law is, or I should say are, a collective noun, the Jewish people. David, what does that mean? That they're the ultimate arbiter of Jewish law? What does it mean? And he quote the Gemara that we quoted, and lo neviim heim, b'nei neviim heim. Fuk hazim mayamad davar, right? We quoted that 1,000 times. Go out and see what the people are doing. And he interpreted it as a general principle. Tell me, taking this principle to heart, now let's follow the development of the conservative movement. Are you allowed to eat fish in a treif restaurant?
Absolutely.
Okay, and remember, you're talking a treif restaurant where a minute before they boiled chaza. It's not a private home where you can say, I didn't touch this dish in 24 hours. And of course, there were various opinions. And you know that the Committee on Jewish Law, or that's what they called it, right? The Committee on Jewish Law, it's not the Halakhic Commission, that was RCA later. The conservative rabbis, the rabbinic assembly, the Committee on Jewish Law, they said there can be many opinions, as long as three rabbis agree. Why? Now, ultimately, what did the people do? Conservative Jews? First they ate non-kosher on the outside. How many conservative Jews have a kosher home today? Then you take Shabbos, driving to shul on Shabbos. Mikvah. Who needs a mikvah? You have a shower. And ultimately, second day yontif. Go stage by stage by stage. Kosher wine. I mean, I'm familiar with that because the Rav was involved. I told you about Rabbi Radin. Came to us. He was on the committee, the Committee of Jewish Law of the Rabbinical Assembly, and he came to us, Rebbe. He was very close to the Rav. He was a Baal Tshuva, but he was in a conservative shul, and he asked the Rav what I should explain to them. And the Rav called over Aaron Lichtenstein. I remember it like yesterday. This is the mid-50s. And the Rebbe is telling Aaron, show him the Tshuva Tarama, show him this, show him that. And Rebbe Aaron had to take Rabbi Radin upstairs to the library. The Gottesman Library was all in the same building. And take the sperm and show it to him.
Rabbi Radin.
R-A-D-I. I write about him in Washington. No, not Rabbi Radin. Rabbi Radin was the Orthodox rabbi of Baltimore. But
his son is
We know that, Rabbi Israel Drazen, Brigadier General in the United States Army. When you come into his house, he has every general in the American Army has his own flag. Are you aware of that? You design your own standard, your own colors. You come in, the first thing you see, there's a mezuzah, and there's the flag of General Dresden. He also happens to be an unbelievably bright guy. I don't know if you're aware of it. He knows uncleus, he knows law. I never saw a guy who's so multidextrous. Wow. But did he tell you that when he went to MTA, they kicked him out of the yeshiva?
He's a neighbor of yours.
Believe me, I know that. But did he ever tell you that they kicked him out of Talmudical Academy? That they didn't tell you. Okay. Two brothers, Joe and Israel. Joe, just total opposites. But Baruch Hashem, they're both my friends. Moshe, this Rashbash, this is life. If you're going to let the people vote, you will be left with nothing. You understand? Ultimately, the human being, what does the Gemara say? Behefkeira nichale. Unfortunately, people choose the easy way out. Behefkeira nichale. And this is why we have to be very careful that the population, that the public has power, goes without saying. But the power has to be limited, has to be channeled. It has to be directed. You can't leave everything to public voice. And this is the history of Torah in America. As you see time and again from my classes on Monday morning, you have the finest, firmest, most wonderful Orthodox Rabbanim in the 1800s in America, and their very shuls, within a few years, become Reformed temples. The people voted. And this is part of the American society. We suffer from this until today. Every rabbi will tell you, and it's a fault, it's a built-in fault system that I've told you time and again, that anyone you pay your membership dues, you have the right to a voice in the synagogue. No, here's a guy pays his membership dues, his bucky and shas and poskim. And here's a guy pays his membership dues, I don't want to tell you what his lifestyle is. And they get up at a meeting, and each one has one vote. And this is exactly the Rashbash. It is like contemporary Judaism. It's literally a description of Solomon Schechter's Catholic Israel. Now, was Solomon Schechter himself, did he envision? All right, I'm a Lamitzkut. Danny, I may be wrong. We had a discussion before class. I don't know in Washington Heights if you'd hear these words. I'm a lamed zchut that he didn't think through these problems to the end. In other words, he was fighting. It's like Rabbi Revel. Rabbi Revel's vision. Who was Rabbi Revel? I once debated with J.J. Schechter, and later documents were found that proved I was right. Am I taking Rabbi Revel? I'm still there. Rabbi Revel's not literature. But in America, you have to go to college. Put it under one roof. Did he think through the problems to the end? I doubt it. I mean, what do we mean problems to the end? You're running a college, you're running a university, you're teaching liberal arts. Tell me, are you allowed to study art? Half the pictures are of nudes. Think for a minute. Are you allowed to study philosophy? Half the philosophers don't believe in God. Mock Torah. Think a minute. English literature. I don't know why, but in my time, all the professors cursed like sailors in English literature. It was a minik hamakom that you couldn't be a professor of English literature if you didn't know how to curse. And there was, remember, Fleischer used to curse Dr. Belkin. I mean, we used to sit there, listen, all right. Knew that he said. The famous story with the Reb Heschel Schechter and Professor Regis. I'm right there. Well, I can tell you, some people repeat the same class every year. They teach exactly the same. I thank the Ribbono Shel Olam that he guided me, that I always said no to. I could have been a success in life, and I turned down every offer just to remain a Malamed and to be Mechadesh. And you all know I haven't repeated the Shi'an the Kolel since 1978, basically. So, okay, Baruch Hashem. Professor A always gave the same class. So we heard the class. I remember walking out with Abba Brandspiegel, and Abba and I both look at each other and say, Aza apikiris. But neither of us ripped Kriya. You understand? Rabbi, the famous Rabbi Brandspiegel and the little Rothkopf, Rakefet, whatever you want to call him, neither of us ripped Kriya. 2 years later, Heschel's in the Rav Schachter's in the class. Then he was Heschel. Heschel's in the class. He says the same terrible words about the Rambam. By the way, these theories have been published. I don't want to repeat them. Terrible theories with the Rambam, with this attitude towards sex, etc. Yeah, there's a machlokes. It's the Ramban versus the Rambam. There's no two ways about it that they have different approaches, but not the way the professor described with Maimonides. So Reb Heschel got up in class and said, "You are not Bikiris," and ripped Kriya that he heard such words. I need not tell you that Professor A kicked him out. He could not graduate college because he was lacking the class in Jewish history. So those of you that have read the commentator, you talk about nepotism. His father worked it out that he could take a Jewish history class in Bernard Revel Graduate School. I think he took with Dr. Lewin on the Polish Gedolim. And because Rabbi Dr. Melech Schachter was a member of the YU faculty, they gave him credit for a Jewish history class, and that's how Reb Heschel finally got his bachelor's. Okay? So tell me, did Rabbi Revel think all this out? And remember, if you've studied that classic volume that has gone through free printings, and I heard in today, I just got an email. Of course, New York is wiped off the map. All the people have to deal with, but it could be, we'll yet be zeichet that there'll be good news that they'll consider doing the fourth edition of Revel and Silver. It's not lost, thanks.
It's not a new fourth edition, a fourth
printing. No, it's a fourth edition. Each time it's been a little... there are changes, there's an edition, there's a difference between Revel, but I'll put in a new introduction into both volumes. So it's called the fourth edition, because it's not exactly the same. Although there are no major changes. There's nothing I have to change factually, basically. There's going to be one addendum to the Suva volume. I want to add one word, but they want me to do it in that. But say that we'll work it out. Halavai.
You know, this past week, there's a Haredi magazine called Amishpacha.
Right.
So they have an article, 4 pages, and now he has a song.
Do me a favor, show it to me.
There's not one word about the rock.
Do me a favor, show it to me. You have it?
Yeah, I'm
so be decent to them. I'm decent to you when you finish. Okay, but say, Moshe, don't defend the name Moshe right now. Let me see the article, and I'll give you my.
I'll bring it.
So thank you. Tomorrow, I want it right here.
You
had it because I saw it. Omer v'yosef. Kodem shekra ani aner. Right, the Rebbeinu Shalom. Anyway, coming back here, don't I write about the criticism of Yeshiva College for honoring Einstein? For honoring Lehman, Senator Lehman, Governor Lehman, Reformed Jews. Einstein was altogether an agnostic. He didn't go to any temple as far as I know. Herbert S. Lehman was in Temple Emmanuel. No? You honor such people? Read what Rothkopf has to say in Revel. See, these are real problems. And I want to tell you something else. How do you balance out the time? How much time do you devote to Shas and Paiskim, and how much time to general studies? I don't believe Revel thought it out thoroughly. And this is why Yeshiva University remains fluid. It's only natural until this very moment you have that article in the commentator which shakes up the world. And when did that article come out? Last Wednesday. We're not talking ancient history. But Lahavdil, between Rabbi Revel and Professor Schechter, I don't believe he ever dreamt the time would come that the conservative movement would say homosexuality is normative. I don't believe he ever thought a time would come that they would say... I know that. He's dead many years, but he died... Not, I realize that. That's what I'm saying. But he left, it's like throwing a snowball down the hill. He introduced the idea of Catholic Israel, and once you introduce Catholic Israel, the people have power. And the people, behevkeira, nichalai. Take a look in Israel. Any intelligent person sees that the only future of the country is with religious Zionism. Without religion, you can't that Zionism doesn't last. And every intelligent person sees it. How many change? It's very hard. Bevkera Nicholai. Netanyahu introduced a Bible class in his residence now. Kol HaKavod. I want to see Netanyahu davening three times a day. You understand? This is what it's all about. But these are human beings. You got to give Sharansky all the credit in the world. He davens three times a day. And remember what he's coming from. Netanyahu comes from a father who knew a great deal, but never went to shul. Then on Yom Kippur, his grandfather was around. You don't know who he's... Sharansky's coming from absolute ignorance. Communism. But the Hefkeira Nichalei, it's our biggest problem. And I have to say, this tshuva of the Rashbash, to me, it's like prophecy fulfilled. Okay. Let me go one more step. I'm going to reach a climax. I don't know if I'll reach it tonight, but next week it's 36,000 sterling, we said, to get into class, to the IOU list. Daniel, you keep an IOU list for me, okay? At the end of the year, the Rebbe, in the bonfire in Lag BaOmer, it goes in, but let it be L'Shem Mitzvah. My dear students, I once did a terrible sin. Can anyone tell me what? I'll give you a hint. It took place in Crown Heights. Let me tell you the story. And then I'll show you the Rambam. Every word true, Ellie. When I was in high school, Lubavitch was first beginning. The Rebbe took charge 1951. The previous Rebbe died in 50. Kolzman, the previous Rebbe, was the Rebbe. Lubavitch was, I wouldn't say stagnating, but it wasn't a massive movement yet. And the bulk of the Hasidim were Europeish people who got across, saved their lives. Then the Rebbe took over. And I don't have to tell you that the Lubavitch Rebbe, this was... We're going to spend many months on the Rebbe. I'm not going to reach him this year, but next year, Be'ezrat Hashem, I'm working very hard to go into the Rebbe's mind. I hope I've gone into some levels of understanding. I still have more to do. It's on my work desk at home. The Rebbe was something special. So we heard about that in Washington Heights, obviously. Everyone was talking. So I decided I want to spend the Shabbos in Crown Heights. I was a kid, but an inquisitive, you know, a kid who was seeking, searching, looking. Of course, my parents couldn't guide me. You have to remember, I have the advantage of being frumf from birth, basically, and yet I have the advantage of a BT syndrome. I once spoke about this in great deal, the advantage of either style. So I had the advantage I could seek and search on my own. So I call up Lubavitch, and right away they put you in hospitality, and I'm invited for Shabbos. I go. Fabulous Shabbos. I learned something that Shabbos that guides me until this very moment. It's the most powerful lesson I got in my life. When I asked my host, who I don't even remember his name, Lubavitcher with a beard, black clothes, I said, what's the difference between you people and a good at Yisrael? You're all in black. I don't come with black. I'm not raised in black. You look the same to me. I wrote this up in Washington. And he says to me, there's one big difference. If I could have built 50 mikvot, Mizrahi would say they're invalid. If Mizrahi built 50 mikvot, I could have would say they're psulot. At Chabad, if Agudah built 50 mikvot and Mizrahi built 50 mikvot, we would send a telegram to each one. Yasha koyach, tisku l'mitzvot. What an answer. Wow. This guides me until this very second. V'kein hala. All right. Shabbos morning, I wake up. We're going to mikvah. Going to mikvah. Are you allowed to take a bath on Shabbos? You study the Gemara in Beitza? Halacha psuka. You're not allowed to take a bath on Shabbos. You're not allowed. A woman, all right, goes to mikveh. That's has a chalais, it's a different story. A man, and I start arguing with my host. And before I know it, they strip me naked and push me into the mikveh. Then you got to know how to dry yourself. I did it. I did a sin. You hear that, Moshe? I did a sin. I admit it. But all right, I'll be malamed tzchut. I was pushed in against my will. If you're going to be a Chabad, you have to experience it. Okay. Tell me, did we have a Takanat Ezra? You've all studied the Sugya and Brachot. We had a Takanat Ezra. It's a very important concept. Ein gozrin gezeiral hatzibur she'ein hatzibur yachol hitkayem ba. When you make a gezeira, din the rabbanon, it has to be something that the tzibur can observe. You cannot make the Jews do something impossible. Give me an example for avodah zarah, the most important example of all. We all drink kosher wine. And yet we use olive oil from Spain, from Italy, right or wrong. All we look for is an OU. The Arabs, most of the Arab, or the olive oil in Israel is made by Arabs. All right, it has hashgacha, fine.
You're talking about intermarriage.
Not beseda, but Chazal originally made a gezeira on both, on wine and on olive oil.
Olive oil can get you crumpled.
But olive oil was so basic to life that you bought every day, you bought more olive oil from your neighbor. By the way, it turns out that the Mideast diet is very healthy. It turns out that olive oil today is, this is the most healthy oil. So it turns out we knew what we were doing.
But
it's an avodah zarah. I can give you the source. I'll give it to you, write it down, I'll give it to you tomorrow, the exact daf. It's not far, it's not in the first, I believe it's in the first parak. Shemin Zayat. So, Ein Atzibi Yechol La'amod Bo. And wine remained a gezeira, and olive oil didn't remain a gezeira. No, what's Takanat Ezra? What's Takanat Ezra? That a man has to go to mikveh in order to study Torah, in order to daven, after he has relations with his wife. Now, just think for 1 minute. What does Takanat Ezra mean? You go to mikveh every morning. Of course, a person has to be modest. It's none of anyone's business what your intimate life is. Modesty. Something we've lacked today. Chabadnik Friedman runs wrote a fabulous book. My wife loved it, and the theme of it is we've lost all modesty today. But modesty is modesty. So you have to go to mikveh every morning.
You say that about a woman too?
Excuse me?
No.
It's only a man. The man for tefillah and
no, well. Modesty.
No. Modesty is modesty. I mean, is your intimate life is not made public. No, but a woman goes to mikveh once a month. How she goes to mikveh? In Washington Heights, they have a mikveh. I remember in my time, who knows what's there today, where the entrance was like going into a store. The mikveh was way down. No one knew where you were going. That was the Yekis. They knew how to live Torah. The Yekis. We have a lot we can learn from them. From the Litvakim, we have to learn how to learn. From the Yekis, we have to learn dignity. And from Chassidim, we have to learn emotion. And if you have all that with a little slabakir in the Vatic and a little love for Rav Ovadia as a postage, you're doing okay. So listen carefully. No, these are sugyas and shas. I'll give you, you'll see in a minute. So, how many of you could go to mikveh every morning? You guys, as is, you daven like bankers here. Whoever heard of a yeshiva davening a quarter to eight in the morning? It's a disgrace.
Quarter to nine.
No, they daven a quarter to eight here. The shtiblach, what do you have? Minyanim, we'll forget about a quarter nine. I once gave my grandson hell. He comes in Cholamay. He was a little kid. He's a sweet kid. He's married to the cousin of the person who bought Marav. He's a sweet kid. So a tall, big kid. You know, he looks like a terror, but he looks like an ape, a gorilla, but he's a teddy bear. So I say, Yosef. It's Cholamay Sukkot. Man Krishma was 8:30. You daven 10 o'clock. He says, Saba, What are you talking about? There were many people there with black clothes and bekishes and strimels and gottels. I said, yeah, that's why they're in Chayrim. You understand? And these guys daven a quarter to eight. All right, you daven a quarter to eight. You have time. You're going to go to mikveh. Going to look for a mikveh. What, they're going to build a mikveh here? That's all Richard Joel has to hear, that we want to build a state-of-the-art mikveh. Another 100 grand expense in Israel. Then he will not be happy. So it's hard. It's hard. I don't want. Well, why should I blame you? Imagine if I had to go to mikveh every morning, I'd blow my brains out. So Chazal abolished Takonat Ezra. However, with Kabbalah, with the birth of Hasidut, and particularly Chabadnikim, they say people like Rakefet can't go to mikveh every day. They're not on a level. But we can live according to Takonat Ezra. And if you're a Chabadnik, and other Hasidim too, they go to mikveh every morning. You will see Chabadnikim running with towels every morning of the week. They go to mikveh. We can live with Takonat Ezra. Are you allowed to do that? I don't know. Mechzei Kiyuri, you look, you know, you look like a big shot. You look like you're arrogant. I don't know if you're allowed to do it. But they do it. And you can't overtake, you can't overturn Hasidus. They are here to stay. I had Rebbeim who would say, unfortunately, they are here to stay. I can't talk that way. When I came back from Chabad that Shabbos, I told Reb Noach Moinstein, Reb Noach, we were very friendly. We're dealing with the Brisker Rav's top Talmud. Simcha, you know what I'm talking about, Reb Noach Moinstein? You heard the term? You've heard Rakefet talk about him over the years? You heard what the Brisker Rav said? Rakefet and the Brisker Rav said exactly the same thing. I said it before. Then I read it in the biography. I couldn't believe it. Reb Noach was a giant of giants. Well, good friends, the Bronx, never. What happened to him in America, the tragedy of what Hitler did to us. Could you imagine if you come into a country with a different language, a different mentality, you're teaching to American kids and you don't even know baseball. So I was so happy with that weekend in Chabad. There was a Fabreng and it was the Rebbe spoke. I think it was Shabbos Mavarch, whatever. In my notes, I already wrote down, I figured out exactly when the Rebbe spoke in the 50s. I think it was Shabbos Mavarch, but I may be wrong. When I lecture, I'll have my notes. I have it all worked out. So I told Rebbe Noach, Rebbe Chafabrach, let me speak English or you won't understand one syllable. I spent a beautiful Shabbos in Lubavitch. If I told him I had gone to a Buddhist temple, he would have been happier. You cannot believe the reaction. And I was a kid. Thank God it didn't destroy me. You understand? Okay. Lubavitch? Shmuel is his son, of course. He has daughters. One of his daughters studied with me in Michalá, or studied at the time I was teaching. It's the early 70s. He complained to me. What an individual, but what he would have been in Europe, and never from the Bronx and the shadow of Yankee Stadium where he lived off the concourse. So you see, the Chabadnikim go every day. Tell me, bad enough they go Shabbos morning. All right, if she came in ice cream and you can crawl out of it, the woman goes to mikveh. All right, it's an only, maybe it's only a Nisa the Rabbanon, the Gemara in Beitza. You dry your hair, you don't shake it out, you just pat it out so there shouldn't be a Shaila of Schita. Maybe you can get out of it. Tell me, what about Yom Kippur? Does anyone go to mikvah on Yom Kippur? Can women go to mikvah on Yom Kippur? Can you, the Chameinuyim, Yom Kippur? Well, I always say, when the fast is over, I thank God I'm able to fast. Thank God. I don't want to talk too loud, because at my age, you don't know what tomorrow will bring. But I'm able to fast. But not Baruch Hashem. Right now I'm young, you're right. But Baruch Hashem, the lack of, you can't wash your face. You can't properly wash your hands. You can't wash your eyes properly. I suffer. But it's Yom Kippur. So you should know evidently there were those Chassidim, those people, I'm talking now at the time, I'm going to quote a Rambam to you, that wanted to go or went to mikvah on Yom Kippur.
Isn't Shabbos at a higher level than Yom Kippur?
Yes, but on the level of water, Yom Kippur is worse than Shabbos. Because Yom Kippur, it's one of the Chamisha Inuyim, the five, how would you say Inuyim? Five ways you afflict yourself. One of the ways you afflict yourself. Affliction. Is a good translation? Affliction. So here the Rambam, and you look into the Makat Mishnah, it's unbelievable the language that all the running to mikvah, it's a minhag that cannot change the halacha. It is asa to go to mikvah on Yom Kippur. Rambam Hilchot Shvitat Asar, the Rambam of Yom Kippur, resting on the 10th day of the month, it's Yom Kippur, Tishrei, Perek Gimel, Halacha Gimel, and the Rambam says, Misha, I don't want to quote the whole Rambam, it's not modest, you look at it, if a man has an emission on Yom Kippur, he dries up, and he davens afterwards. That the whole going to mikvah for a man is only a minhag. And you got to remember, a chassid who studies Zohar, if you've been exposed to some of the Breslov books that circulate, again, I want to minimize my language because it's not modest, but this whole thrust that's so sinful, an admission, so the person is overwhelmed. Let me go to mikvah. Let me purify myself. Absolutely not. The Ein Minhag, I'm quoting the Rambam now. Listen to these words. It's been quoted 10,000 times over. The Ein Minhag Levatel Dava Ha'asur Ela Le'asur Etamuta. A Minhag? You cannot knock out a prohibition. You want to be machmir and add to a prohibition and have your own personal minhag, that is allowed. But you can't have a minhag, knock out a prohibition. And this is, look into the Makat Mishnah, he explains that, he quotes the Gemara, Udvarim brurim hein, this is black and white. And what does it mean, a minute to add? I'll give you an example, very simple. I don't eat kosher gelatin. I can't say it's us, so what am I, an idiot? My Rebbe was mate kosher gelatin.
He was mate regular gelatin.
Regular gelatin, fine, you're right. Reb Chaim Eisu was mate regular gelatin.
From a pig?
From a cow, a treif cow, whatever, because it totally loses its identity. Yes, from a pig, whatever you want. The rub was mutter. But I know as a kid, I just couldn't eat. I have a minig, I don't eat kosher gelatin. It's a minig. That minig is good. Why? It's forbids that which is permissible. But to turn around and say, I can go to mikvah and Yom Kippur, chas v'chalilah. And but you have to understand the psychology here. In other words, Ephraim is sitting there. Why should a person want to go to mikvah? Vas geit man im leben? Can I, Ephraim, we can speak a little Yiddish. Vas geit man im leben? Go and translate that. God, it's impossible. You can't, it's impossible. Vas geit man im leben? Oh, these poor guys. Ellie is looking there. Ellie, vas geit man im leben? Why does it bother him so? Why? Because to him, he had an omission. He has to daven. He has to face God. He has to go to mikveh. He has to purify himself. Not a on Yom Kippur. And even though he cries and says to the rabbi, "Rabbi, whenever I have an admission, I go to mikvah. I go to mikvah every morning. Not on Yom Kippur." Got it? And that's what it means. Minav mevatel halacha chas v'chalila. When it's in doubt, so the minute can determine what you do. But when there's no doubt, and those are the words of the Maggid Mishnah, v'hadvarim brurim. These are the words of the Maggid Mishnah. Minhag cannot be mevatel. You want minhag to add? That's a different story. We all have that. Yeah, I can give you another example. You want a minhag that overtook me here in Israel. When I came in Aliyah, who said every morning, Pitum HaKtoret? Who said Ein Kalokeinu? Chassidim said it. Show me one Litvish Yeshua in America, one Misnagdus Yeshua. Ein Kalokeinu, you said on Shabbos. So when we were just Chadashim Baretz, 1969, so we had a minyan in the Mindy Absorption Center, but I had a bar mitzvah. Had a bar mitzvah. A kid from Maplewood, from that area. Maplewood, South Orange, where I was rabbi. A kid, I knew the family. So the bar mitzvah was at the kotel. And this kid, although they were totally irreligious, very sadly so, but they related to Gedolei Yisrael. And there was Gedolei Yisrael at the bar mitzvah, and we're davening, we don't say in Kalakenu. They wanted to chop my head off. Litvish people, Minig Eretz Yisrael, everyone says, Ein Kalokeinu. Until today, 43, 44 years later, I have missed the morning of saying Ein Kalokeinu. And every shul says it. So that's a minig, all right? The minig, it adds, it doesn't subtract. And that's fine. But the opposite way, absolutely not. And once again, it comes back to the Rashbash that when you deal with the Jew, behefkeira nichalei. Let me go one step further. I'm building up to a big crescendo, but the crescendo will come next week. And next week, either you say Rakepit is a genius or an idiot, but it's nowhere in the middle. It's Untvida or, as the Rav used to say, either or. But let me get there. I'm building up. I can see Yaakov understands my joy. Let me show you a Ritva. Fabulous, fabulous Ritva. Let me tell you a little story with the Rav. I quote the Rav word by word, and the Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. You'll all recognize the story. Rav Heschel Schechter tells the story in one of his volumes on the Rav. We all heard the Rav in the 50s, was very much alive in his mind. When he came to Boston, you got to remember, a shul did not bring him. It was a group of shuls that had, a tehillah for the city. What did they call it? Do you know the exact name? Yeah, I mean, the chevra limud, or what they...
Chevra shas.
And this could be, it was called the chevra shas that they brought in. It was a number of shuls together. Mr. Abeloff, who himself, I understand, had smicha from Slabatka, was a businessman. He brought the Rav. He was the main force behind bringing the Rav. The Rav is buried right next to him. If you see where the Rav is buried, could be, but Abeloff is right behind the Rav.
And his son was one of the few people that went every day to see the
Rav. Right, to see the Rav when he was ill. Absolutely. He lives here today. That's, Joe. I think it's Joseph, right? Yeah. So the Rav says the first time he davened, and it is an interesting question. In Israel, we have Birchat Kohanim every day. In Chutz Laaretz, the Svadim has Birchat Kohanim every day. The Ashkenazim do not. not even on Shabbos. So already the Achronim deal with it. You look into the Mishnah Berurah, you'll see. Of course, we don't have joy, we don't have Simcha, we're in Gullis. We can't have Birchat Kohanim. It's Gullis. Okay, I'm happy to hear that in Teaneck they recognize they're in Gullis. That's a small little miracle right there, Danny, right there. Don't cry wolf, but it's a miracle. My dear students, yont if you have Birchat Kohanim, v'samachta b'chagecha v'yitach sameach. What about when Yontif falls on Shabbos? Do you know that many shuls in America, when I was growing up, they did not have Birchat Kohanim? Shabbos, Birchat Kohanim, like it's a malacha, it's forbidden. This is absolute ignorance. If you have Birchat Kohanim on Yontif because it's a zman of Simcha, Allah had come and become, you should have Birchat Kohanim when Yontif falls on Shabbos. Right or wrong? Double reason to have Birchat Kohanim. And I remember in my shul, there was no Birchat Kohanim in where I grew up on Yontif on Shabbos. I remember in Newark. I remember in Maplewood. Had exactly the problem the Rav had, except I was smarter, because I knew what the Rav told us. So the Rav comes to shul, and he was a young man, and he was a genius, and he was a little bit too strong, and he started screaming at them. The Rav told the story. Two reasons. So they did Birchat Kohanim and then they threw the Rav out and told him never come back to this shul again. And the Rav told us, I was young, I didn't know how to approach it. You have to educate the people. And he says, when you go into the rabbinate, if you have this problem and similar problems, educate the people. And slowly but surely you'll see they'll come around, but you can't do it by yelling and shouting and doing it all at once. And the Rav gave another example, which he also gave me. He told about how this rabbi, a Talmud of his, came to him, how the Balabatim are always in a rush to end Shabbos. And he told the rabbi, give a series of lectures on Shkia, say Takachavim, the halachic differences, the parameters, the various machlokot, Rabbeinu Tam Shita, what we do. And he says, you'll see if you will explain it, but Tuv Tam, the Balabatim won't rush to end Shabbos. The three stars, there's a lot to talk about. Do you know that this thought, and by the way, I have to tell you in Maplewood, I am proud to tell you it took me a year or two, but by the mid-60s, we had Birchat Kohanim when Yontif fell on Shabbos, with no problem whatsoever. Of course, I will be honest with you, there's a difference between Rothkopf and Maplewood in the 60s and Mori Urebi in Boston in the 30s. Can anyone tell me the difference? He was dealing with Europeisha. And they were yelling at him, in Europe we didn't talk anyone this, we know from Europe, what are you talking about? Ich komme vom Azar Shtetl, and the Rebbe's given Azar Tzadik, and the Rebbitzin was like this, and you're trying to tell us? I didn't have that. I'm dealing with people who moved out of Newark to be in Maplewood, South Orange. It's an American generation, basically. I had a few survivors, Mr. Sabin, remember Max Sabin, Abe Levine. I had a few of Joe Leff, do you remember Joe Leff?
Dr. Weinstein.
Yeah, Morris Weinstein. So I had a number, but he was American born, Morris, but Joe Leff was a year.
He died at the age of 104.
Yeah, I know that. Joe Leff was the vice president, and he used to call the shul the embassy for God. If you want to meet God, this is the embassy. This is where you meet. Then I would go with the Torah, and Simchas Torah, he would kiss me and kiss the Torah. Ich kush the Rebbe as via Sefer Torah. Halavai, my students would treat me like that. That's all I can tell you. Ach, what memories, what memories. Tell me, did they duchen in Young Israel? Were you in Young Israel with they when Shabbos Yanta fell together? Did they duchen? They did. You're sure? Yeah, but that Rabbi Siegel was there, I know. But did they duchen? Did the Balabatim? When you what? Okay, it's a, so anyway. Yeah, yes, Nachum. Says don't duchen. What British singer?
The new one. The corn sitter.
No, the new one.
Jonathan Sacks.
That's American. The Jonathan Sacks.
And it says
the English edition. It says don't.
Not to duchen. Rebbe would have heart failure.
By the way, Jonathan Sacks down by an army room in the shop.
But he has a brother two blocks away. What's the big deal? Baruch Hashem. Jonathan Sacks. What are you on a first name basis? No. Sir Jonathan Lord Sacks.
Lord.
Okay. So let me end off, gentlemen. I have to tell you what the Rav.
You never got to the Ritva.
I'm right there. What the Rav? Yitzchak, you suffer from sublinitis. What the Rav? Let me say. What the Rav told us is exactly a Ritva. And here it is. It's in the Sugyan Psachim. The sugi of Makom Shenahagu, Chidushei Haritba, Psachim, Daf. Let me just check for sure that I give you the right Daf. On the sugi Psachim Nun Aleph Amid Aleph, and it's right at the end before Amid Bet, and the Ritba is so magnificent here. He says, if there's a minute that you feel is not correct, and he says, it's obvious that they have this minhag shenan b'nei Torah. And they, these people are not big talmidei chachamim. He cautions the Rav, or the learned Jew, don't fight with them in public. Don't go and, in a demonstrative fashion, show that you're wrong. Why? Shelo yehei b'dava machloket. Ad sheyuchal hagziram liatmat. Don't make a big fight. Do it slowly. Educate them. Step by step. And that's where there's a minute, like the one I just spoke about, where you duchen, you don't duchen, you just heard that the official sanctioned sitter of the United Synagogue of Her Majesty's Empire tells you, don't listen to Rakefet, no duchening on Shabbos. Period. But that's where there's room, right? It's incorrect. But don't make a machloket. However, v'yim hata'ana muhra, but if you're absolutely right and what they're doing is against the halacha, ein chachma, v'ein etza, v'ein tfuna, neged Hashem. There you have to yell, shout, scream, let nothing stop you, because what they're doing is absolutely and totally wrong. So you see, what a fantastic concept, but not a simple concept. If I go back to the Steichemed, there are so many divisions and subdivisions, and it's not black and white. At times you wind up right in the gray area. When it's Dinei Mamonot, everything follows the handshake. Bracha, mazel u'bracha. Mazel u'bracha, mamonet, hefka, beitin, hefka, taxes, nothing. As
47th.
At 47th Street, or like I said last week, halavai, imagine I'll go to the tax office. I want to protest. You took off 22% of my salary taxes. I am a frum Jew, and according to the Torah, I only have to give a little over 10%. Work it out, Maisa Rishon, Maisa Sheni, and Trumat, a little over 10%. No, they're going to say, you're a tzaddik, you're a gaon, you're wonderful, you're learned, you're knowledgeable, you learned in Slabodka, you learned in Nevadik, but dina de malchuta dina, hefka beten hefka, mishpat hakoin, and the Knesset, this is what they decided, this is the minhag hamakom. When it comes to Issa, if it's definitely Issa, nothing helps. If it's Rofefet, look what the people do. If you don't like what the people do, and the beautiful example is the Rav with Birchat Kohanim, don't make machloket. Slowly. So to reiterate, what did we do today? We saw the Rush with Hefka Beitin Hefka. We saw the Rush Pash and we compared him to Catholic Israel. We saw the Ritva, and wow, it is scintillating. We have a drop more to go in the topic, but that Be'ezrat Hashem is next week. Tomorrow, listen carefully. I wouldn't miss it for anything. The attempt to make Rav Avram Rice 4 different times Chief Rabbi of the United States. Why did it fail? Setting the stage for the saddest chapter in American Torah history, R.J.J. Gentlemen, a few comments on life. A copy of the YU article, Perry, if you didn't see it, it's yours. My comments, I can't comment, I'm not there. All I can say is nepotism. You fellas explain to me what's going on in YU, that's a serious problem. Why? Because if nepotism is what counts, we're Hasidish. We're like a Litvishi yeshiva. Tells today in Cleveland is basically closed down because of nepotism. You didn't get the top faculty. You didn't get the top Rashi yeshiva. You just got sons-in-law. Chas v'chalila, why you should be like that? So if that's true, it is a problem. You think only YU has problems? I want to show you, Josh Schneider sent this to me. This is the picture of a Torah Vadas graduate. Chaim Weitz, known today as Gene Simmons, and he was born a second generation, a survivor, the rock star band Kiss. You've heard of it, Kiss? Yes. I'm an Amoritz. You guys know everything. What does this mean? Who boasts a black book of over 200 names. Women. What does that mean? A black book of women?
You don't want to know.
I understand already. And that's what he... And this is... So not only does YU have problems, but there we have a Torah Vadas graduate. Finally, a very fascinating article by my Talmud, Rabbi Yehoshua Grinstein, who some of you may get to know professionally because he runs a rabbinic program for Chutz Laretz. They fill you, when you get smicha, you only have to go there a very short time. They fill you in on how to be a rabbi, and they send you Chutz Laretz. It's fabulous. When you live in Israel, you build up enough means when you come back 3 to 5 years later, you can buy a dira and become a rabbi. I know cases become rabbanim here, and they've lived happily ever after. Anyway, he wrote this article that appeared in Jewish Press. It's in Efrat. He's taking a stroll, and there's a sign up, Dabru Ivrit, speak Hebrew. And it's the problem of Efrat and Beit Shemesh with so many Americans, the kids don't speak Hebrew. Now, I want to tell you, some of my Torah is in his article. When you read the article, the Ramban, you know I'm talking about, the Ramban in Pashat Bo, HaChodesh HaZelech and Rosh Chodeshim, look at the Ramban. And I want to tell you, it's a problem, but this problem ameliorates itself, slowly but surely. I already will have great-grandchildren who will only speak to me in Hebrew. I will answer them in English on purpose because they have to know how to use a computer, and the greatest gift in life is language. But it's a reality. I believe, let life take its course. Don't force. I courted my wife in English. I still court her in English. And if she calls me a donkey, I know I'm in trouble. If she calls me a chamar, It doesn't register. When I came in Aliyah, my sister-in-law called my brother-in-law a Hamar, 1969. Gee, isn't that sweet? She's calling him a Hamar. If she called him a jackass, it would register. My dear students, until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya.
Perry, did you see the